Races with Steve Bass.
Very good Wednesday, Thursday, race fans. Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening that way and at our website, stevepick.com, the other option. Got a kind of dive right into things, actually, because Frank McGoey is going to join us immediately, virtually, within a couple of minutes, and we'll get his opinions on the Fairgrounds card, and then things will unfold like usual on Thursday, including Tony Black and Rich Eng later. I want to get more basketball from Rich, right? Let's see what Rich likes the next 2 days. And Joe Clancy this week on the This Is Horse Racing conversation. A little bit more, maybe even a little bit more Saratoga specially, as it were, because I saw that yesterday Joe was putting out the schedule for the Saratoga special. They've got their calendar established. So, Joe Clancy, we'll get a bunch of topics of the day from Joe, and I suppose we can get a little Cheltenham, get his Cheltenham recapping in as well. Josh Pons is going to join us after Frank, and I'm looking forward to talking to Josh, and we'll catch up on everything going on at Country Life Farm, and that'll include, I suppose, we can even get a little update on our Motown that's down there. We actually left the Motown in Maryland at the farm, and when Volterine went down there to be covered by Mosler, and the Mosler baby is due, I think, in the next 3 weeks, if I'm not mistaken. And then she's going to go back to Country Life for Mosler, for a second pass at Mosler. And I want to thank everybody for the really kind and sweet, mazel tovs on Carlisle Bell's baby. We're going to go down tomorrow. Teeny gets out of school an hour earlier than usual. At 2:30, they get out on Friday. So we're going to go down to Hudson, down to Rock Ridge, and see the new baby. He's a colt, and he's going to be a gray. Takes, I don't know, 3-4 months, right, for that to sort of sort itself out and emerge. So kind of excited, and I'm thrilled, actually, at least from the photograph, about his size, because Belle herself was not a big horse, and she thought she was a big horse, and she tried hard like a big horse. This is her first foal, and so you don't want too undersized of a baby, and nice and leggy. So, and I forget what the percentage is. This is a crazy stat that people might not realize. In a foal, there's a large percentage. Maybe I can ask Josh this. There's a large percentage of the horse's leg is established as a foal. They don't get a lot taller, a lot longer. It's pretty amazing, actually. That's why they're all floppy, and those legs are too big for the rest of the body, because I think it's like 70%, maybe. I should look that up, and Maybe Josh has got a number he can put on it. So Frank McGoey first, Josh Pons, Tony Black. I want to talk to Tony about that incident at Turf Paradise. And if you hadn't seen this, the suspension involving Fausto Da Silva got 30 days because he pulled up that huge favorite a week ago, actually, a week ago today. And he is basically being chided for not calling over the state vet. I want Tony to talk about that and get his perspective. All right? So, topic for Tony. And more today. Let me reach for Frank. And, of course, I want to also, since we're going in this direction, of course, I want to get an update from Frank and find out if, you know, what he knows about anybody that hopefully, you know, got through okay from the storms the other night. I mean, the once daylight hit yesterday, the pictures were unbelievable. Frank McGoey is joining us. They're having the renovation break at Fairgrounds. Frank, good morning.
Hey, Steve, how are you?
I'm terrific. The first order of business, friends and relatives and your customers.
With the storm, with the tornado.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, thankfully it was very isolated. It's, you know, it's about 15 minutes away from the track. But I think for the most part, everybody did good. And because we had a lot of warning that we were going to have a bad weather day. They let some of the schools out early, and so people were prepared. So, you know, knock on wood, this is something we don't have to worry about this weekend.
Nice. All right. Well,
yep.
I'm glad to hear
good
that.
Good news.
All right. Wanted to check.
And we're all glad you made it back home safe after your epic Animal House road trip.
We sophomore dies in kiln accident.
I'm sure you're paying for it at home now.
A little bit.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Well,
they definitely get even.
Somehow I managed to parlay it into an April vacation because she said, I want to go away for my Easter break. And so she booked a trip to Sanibel Island, which she loves. I've never been. So I said, well, I've got to do the show. I mean, it's 3 weeks out from Derby. She says, that's fine, but you're taking me on vacation.
Well, so, you win again. My wife would have shot me to death.
I can tell you that once this card came together over the weekend, I certainly would have liked to have figured out a way to be there on Saturday. And
it should be fun,
right? The race now, the main the turf course should, you know, right, should be
turf
fine. By
be in great shape,
great.
And I heard we're going back to for the Risen Star. I think that did they leave? I think they left them out at no. Maybe they took them all the way down, but they'll be back at zero. But still, I mean, this turf course has a mind of its own. You know that.
Yeah,
I mean, if
exactly.
Anybody's followed Fairgrounds, it has produced some crazy results this meet.
Well, and we'll touch on it. And you know, really, it's a main track. It's a main track kind of a card between those. You know, the two maiden race sprints and the 3-year-old races on later on, and the feature with the older horses, the handicap division. I mean, Frank, let's back it up right, you know, from the Derby and work backwards. I mean, that's the logical
okay.
thing to do. And
yep.
You know, you look at this epicenter, and you got to essentially figure out a scenario. You know, who's going to run with him? Who's going to, you know, take a piece of him out and take some starch out? And does it make him vulnerable? I mean, how do you see this?
You know, I kind of thought of it the same way. He's clearly, in my mind, he's the horse to beat, no doubt about it. And the more I kept thinking about it, the more I kept thinking that the only two that would probably have a chance to step up would be the two that have been closest to him in his recent races. One being Pioneer Medina, who stalked him and was clearly, you know, all in chasing at the quarter pole. So he's got a lot of catching up to do. And then Call Me Midnight, who, you know, sat out the last fight, but is a horse that the distance won't be a problem for Call Me Midnight. He's got a big, long stride, and he made a nice run at him. But, you know, I think everybody can see that day Epicenter probably ran the better race, even though he got beat. And if you notice on the gallop out of that race, Epicenter wasn't a lot better up front of him, that's right. So I don't think the distance is going to be a problem for Epicenter. You know, it's one of those races where I just haven't seen enough from the other players to think that they're going to step up and catch up, because I think Epicenter just keeps getting better and better every week. I mean, he looks fantastic, and he's doing really good. Very relaxed. very relaxed.
Well, and that could go a long way. It'd be interesting to see who of the candidates to be forward, and I suppose Zozos for Cox and Pioneer of Medina coming back again with Gaffalione here. Those are the two that have got, you know, some speed to potentially add some pressure. And really, to some degree, the candidates for something, you know, something different to happen, for an alternate result, feels to me like Zozos and company, Kapuna perhaps, you know, those are the horses I think I want to look at. I'm not so enamored with those that have taken shots already.
Yeah, I can see I can see that. I just think, I mean, I personally think that Zozos and Kapuna may just be a notch below where he is. And I don't see that they have made enough of an improvement to make me think. Now they have improved, but I don't think that they've done enough to make me think that they'll step forward to get him on Saturday.
Interesting.
That's why I was thinking the ones that were closer would have a better chance of improving along with him a little bit and having a shot at him.
You know,
I still think he's going to be real tough to beat.
One horse that we should really, and I didn't really discuss him much with Chad Schexnader on Tuesday, but the other McPeak Lucky Seven horse takes a shot in here. Smile Happy taking an alternate route for his final prep, and instead McPeak brings Rattle and Roll to town. I Smile Happy didn't run badly.
No.
In the Risen Star, you could argue that, you know, Rattle and Roll disappointed in the Fountain of Youth, however, and it was the seasonal debut. But he's an unknown factor coming in. He comes in on a hot bullet, a 58-4 coming into this.
Yeah, I got a chance. I watched that workout on XBTV. And, you know, this horse was, if I remember correctly, Rattle and Roll was getting outworked by a maiden that ran on the same card on Fountain of Youth Day. That wound up was like 15-1 morning line and wound up going off favorites for Mike Peake that day. But then I watched his most recent work with Smile Happy, and this horse didn't look real comfortable to me. He was hot, and he was clearly outworked by Smile Happy. I don't see it. I don't see him shipping down here and improving enough to be a factor. I'm definitely won't be using him on Saturday.
The other Fountain of Youth exeter, of course, is Galt, and the Larry Best Medaglia d'Oro that Bill Mott sends in. And while we're on that topic, the other Mott that was victimized in the Fountain of Youth, High Oak is not going to make the Wood Memorial. He's got an ankle that is bothering him and has not been able to really, you know, get into a workflow. And so they're going to rework their spring plans and target the Pat Day Mile. So you can take High Oak off your Wood Memorial probable list in 2 weeks. So FYI there. But Mott sees fit to give Galt another shot in here, and he did come back at least out of the fountain and got a half mile work in last week.
Yeah, no, he looked like he was winding up when you know, he tripped and unseated his rider, so it's hard to say. You got to respect that Mott brought him is bringing him down here and giving him another shot. You got to think the horse is doing fine. I'm sure he wouldn't be here if he wasn't. He's a bit of an unknown. I mean, I'll have to make a decision, I guess, on game day when I see him and decide how I'm going to play it. Based on what he's done in his, you know, body of work, he's going to have to step up a lot to beat a horse like Epicenter. But I can't say I won't be using him underneath in some kind of fashion.
Fair enough. Well, I bring him up. It just so happens this morning when I went to, I wanted to have the stakes PPs with the morning line, and I saw where Marcus picked Galt, which kind of raised, I mean, he did it remotely. He's out of town for another assignment, so Marcus is not going to be there for Derby Day, but I was a little surprised by that. I felt like a little bit of a read. Exactly. Let's let's back up into the Oaks. And you know, it's funny going into this, Frank, before Third Graph came out the other night, I had thought that Epicenter, was who I wanted to really lean on, and that if I was going to take a shot against somebody, it would be Echo Zulu. And then when I saw the figs, I thought, well, wait a minute. If Echo Zulu comes back as the same horse that she left as a 2-year-old, I don't think anybody can beat her here. It's just a question of preparedness. And then Epicenter actually was not lauding it over on figs to a few in this field. So that concept kind of shifted in my mind. What's your thought on Echo Zulu coming back here?
So, I mean, the clear advantage she's got on figures and what she's accomplished, I'm thinking is going to be negated by a disadvantage in fitness up against this field. I'm taking a shot against.
Okay.
If this is the time to catch her, in my opinion, basically what you see in the works is what she's done here. I guess she probably got here mid-January and galloped for about 3 weeks before she started back with a really slow 3/8 and then a slow half mile and then a slow 5/8 and a couple of faster 5/8. But they're in a lot of trouble. If she's able to win this race going forward, she's going to be, they won't be able to deal with her down the line. I'm taking a shot against, though. I think that Hidden Connection, when she faced Echo Zulu in the Breeders' Cup, really nothing went right for her. And I kind of felt the way I feel about Echo Zulu is how I felt about Hidden Connection before her last race, that she needed it. But since then, and she actually didn't have an easy trip that day. She bobbled a little bit, and Ray Lou had to use her a little bit for some position. And then I think that the incident when Lecrette went bad on the backside was pretty significant because she was just getting into a rhythm. And then he bumped her and pushed her out to the middle of the track. And then she wound up like going back away and got tired late, which I think she had a right to do. But she's trained really forwardly. And I think she's going to be operating in the perfect spot right on Echo Zulu's hip. And I think she's going to take it to her. And I think Ray Lou's going to ride her with a lot of confidence. So, and at the price she's going to be, Steve, I'll pay to see her lose if she loses. How's that?
I can understand. And in fact, Tuesday with Andy, we touched on Andy Serling, and Andy said that he felt that Hidden Connection, that this was the right opportunity. I know some people are going to look at Favor, the Pioneer of the Nile for Stone Street, and Pletcher. Feels like Turner Loose is going to have to improve, again off the Rachel win. Sequist, second off the layoff and coming out of that same Berna Breezy win on Friday before the Rachel Alexandra. And you have to really applaud what Matt Shire did with Berna Breezy. He didn't want to, basically feed her to the graded stake gods, and took basically handled that group with a plum. She's going to have to step forward though for a graded stake placing.
No, she will. She will have to step up. But I agree with you. I mean, Matt couldn't have handled this horse any better, and she keeps getting better, and she's doing well. And actually, she will be my main key underneath Hidden Connection to pick up the pieces, especially since I'm the way I'm going to be playing the race is that Hidden Connection takes advantage of a Echo Zulu that needs a race, and maybe when, hopefully puts her away early and Berna Breezy or Turner Loose can come run it.
So kind of a six with 2-4.
Six with 2-4. Yep. And listen, if Echo Zulu wins, I tip my cap. I need a 3-5 shot like you need another road trip.
I'm always willing to hop on the road. Don't sell me short. Let's talk about the Munis, and here's the mile in the eighth standard. We've got Chad Brown sends Devamani and Sacred Life, who was kind of getting untracked late in the Pegasus Turf event. But really, when I dug into this, we went right back to Santine, the Godolphin Brendan Walsh runner coming out of the fairgrounds where, he was the universal choice at what was a bad morning line. And he basically arrived late on the scene.
Yep. So I got a chance to see the two Chad Brown horses this morning. I think they're in the Al Stahl barn. They were out for just a little light work, and they both look really good. I think the race looks like it's going to set up for a closer. I want no part of Cavalry Charge again. I don't think Two Emmys is the same horse that she was last year. And Hugh Robertson's having a tough meet. I think the race definitely looks like it's going to favor a closer to me. And the two Chads and Brendan's Hall horse, and if you had to go one more, one deeper for just a horse that just seems like an ultimate professional, another mystery who just looks great every morning, does everything good, and is cutting back and is going to come running. And Jareth Loveberry's having a good meet, so he'd be the home rooting choice for me. But Chad's two horses is going to be tough to beat in this spot, I think.
Well, for me, yeah, the two of them, and I'm just going back. I think I prefer Sacred Life and Santine. Santine and Sacred Life to me are the.
I agree. In my mind, I had the race 2, 9, 3, and 7.
There you go. There you go. All right.
I'm gonna yep.
We'll jot it down. Let's press into the New Orleans Classic, and Bill Mott, who is already sitting in great shape in the division, and certainly in the one turn mile category, with the big winner Speaker's Corner at Gulfstream a few weeks ago, 2 weeks ago, but Olympiad, there's a lot of things they can do with him on the chessboard,
yeah.
And he feels like he'll take a lot of beating in here.
He does. He looks like he's going to control the race. My cute thought is that I'm hoping for it to line up, since there's not a lot of pace in the race. I was hoping that they line up 2-3 in this race and kind of stay that way around the track. That's how I was going to play it. Thinking Superstock is going to move forward off that first effort. He's looked good here his last couple of works, and I thought Rosario would keep him in close contact because, I mean, I don't think the rest of them have enough speed that they could be laying close. I would guess Promise Keeper has some, but I was just hoping for a lineup 2-3 around a racetrack.
Olympia,
it's funny. Graham's on Happy American here. I noticed when I was handicapping the other night that all of Graham's horses in the dirt stakes all have the exact same running style. They all fall out the back and all come closing late. Happy American, Burna Breezy, and Call Me Midnight. It's funny. You would think by the last one maybe he'd have the timing right on when to pull the trigger, right?
Well, there you go. Depending on how the track's
playing.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly right. You mentioned Happy American, and I'm going to go to a sidebar for just a second. That Troberitz came up
yep.
the other day, and who was visiting that?
That was Larry Jones's horse.
Yes, that was Larry Jones.
And Downhill's got him. Yeah, that's a Lothenbach. Is that who has got that? I believe it is.
And Jones, Brary Jones, Airdrie.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah, that's who it was. Right.
And that win, I think, went under the radar, and I never checked a fig. But this is a horse that needs to be kept tabs on.
No. Yeah, he's doing good. Yeah, he was. Definitely a play the day she won. I think she was 8-1 too. Yep. She's all right.
Yeah, paid $19.40 actually.
Mm-hmm.
For those who want to write it down, Trobairitz.
And is working well since.
There you go. All right. So Olympiad and Superstock in the New Orleans. Let's talk about the Benson and the pick five, which maybe very formful when you got horses like Olympiad and potentially Epicenter and or Echo Zulu. So finding a price would go a long way. But honestly, when I looked at this, Frank, it felt like, the morning line was not just accurate, but maybe the right, yeah, right? The right compass.
Yeah. I mean, so Henny Woods is 2-for-2 here. She's getting Lasix back, and she's been prepping for this. the whole meet. I mean, she's been here since day one, and she's doing well. She looks good. I think it's going to be the type of race that's going to be kind of forward run race. So I think, you know, be in a good position. Clearly a horse to beat, but, you know, the Cassie Barn, I don't know what their expectations were coming in here, but they've had a bit of a rough meet. That would be my only hesitation. And with that in mind, I think there's one horse maybe that might be able to step up, and I'm hoping can step up at a little bit of a price, like you said, because you got to find something with a little value. Lovely Ride. Her turf race down here was impressive to me. Didn't beat this type, but I think maybe has another move forward. And I know that since that race, she was a private sale to the group that's going to be running her now. That's why you see the change of trainer to Deodoro. And, you know, this is that trip that Florent Giroux loves. He's going to be up close stalking outside. So I thought that I was going to put 6 and 9 in my top flight. And then Gam's Mission is a tough read for me. Since she's been down here, she hadn't done much. And I'm going to give her a lot of respect, but she's going to need some pace to close into, I think. And so will Lake Lucerne, who I think is maybe the other player. But I wasn't too creative here. Maybe just, you know, 6 and 9 over 1 and 4. I don't want anybody coming out of the Marie Krantz, the last, or the Albert Stahl, I'm sorry, the last prep. I mean, the day to have She Can't Sing was last time when she was 24-1, and I didn't have her, so I won't be on her this time.
No, fair enough. I had similar, you know, those were the three. I didn't think there was a need to be too, you know, too original or creative when it comes down to it. All right. Frank McGowey with us from Fairgrounds, and we can talk in a second about I'll keep this the same way I did it with Chad. And before we talk about the state bred races, a quick survey, Frank, of the maidens. There's two maiden specials, one for boys, one for girls, going 3/4, and then there's two turf routes. Boys go in the second, the girls go in the fourth. Anybody that has caught the eye going into this?
Yeah, the first race is really competitive, and I've got 4 or 5 that have caught my eye in this race. And I bet on Georgetown Road the last two times,
right?
And I'm going to be taking a stand against this time because I thought that she had every opportunity to win last time, got the right setup, got the right trip, and didn't get there. So with that being said, you could probably go ahead and hoop her right now since I'll be trying to beat her, right? But I think both Amoses have been working well. Violent Outburst and Exactitude, they worked together, and I believe Violent Outburst maybe was a little bit better. Al Stahl's horse, Miss Red, is one that every work has just gotten a little bit better. And I really like that. And then a tough read on Asmussen, because this isn't usually how Asmussen horses work, with a quick work out of the gate when they come back the next time. But this horse is exceptionally fast, Belle Rebelle, just blazing early fractions in her 2 gate works. So 4, 5, 6, and 8 are the ones in there, and probably all of them are good enough that they could win if they weren't facing each other first time out.
Well, the mention again of the Violence filly, Violent Outburst, Trilogy Racing. I got the nicest email yesterday from Ryan Gallivan, and Ryan very excited about Saturday, and this is the first horse that he's been involved in as an owner, and so it's kind of cool. And on, you know, on a big Derby day when with the great atmosphere there, so easy to wish him good luck. Exactly.
Yep.
I started to do some pedigree work on that second. These are the boys going a mile in the 16th.
Yeah, you know, Mazuma has had a lot of chances. She was 5-2 morning line favorite last time, and probably deservedly based on what she had done. But, you know, she took no money that day, he took no money that day and did not run particularly well. Looked really good coming through the other day. Maybe he got an oil change. I don't know. Maybe he'll run better. But they got a couple in here that have some ability. And I am forced, as you know, to have to include any horse named my brother Patrick, since I have a brother named Patrick, right? But lucky for me, my brother Patrick can run a little bit. And I think Stidham probably thinks he can run a little bit too, because he's put him with Proxy in a couple of his most recent works. And I know he thinks highly of that one. And then Al Stahl's horse, Madison Loves Duke. This is another one similar to the horse in the first, that Al just brings him along the way he brings him along. Each work is a little bit better than the next. And that horse is doing real well. And the rail horse with Dallas, Faith Runner, he's another one kind of similar to Mizuna that's had a lot of chances, but finished good last time and is going to get a good trip. So I think those are the main players. And, you know, hopefully my brother Patrick wins this race and on the day. How's that?
I love it. And in fact, you bring up Patrick, and one of the funniest conclusions of the New Orleans trip was after the Risen Star Rachel card, I headed out.
Oh, yeah.
And, yeah, I ended up, you know, I ended up having to, there were parades going on, so things were all goofy getting back to St. Charles in the garden. And so I ended up going to College Inn.
College Inn.
And I'm sitting there. And by the way, I had, Frank, as good a burger as I've had, I mean, in recent memory of the last, I don't know how many, I can't even think of one that was as good. So
Fate landed you in a good local spot, and you just ruined it by giving it out on the air.
Yeah, well, right? It's right by the Rockin' Bowl, and same owner, right? And
yep.
And in walks Patrick and his wife. So
you had just said goodbye to, you know,
yeah,
45 minutes before the track, right? That was crazy.
It was
that
very
was absolutely
funny.
Nuts.
You mentioned a couple of horses, though, that I do want to stress for a second, because there's two that are making a transition here to turf, and Brendan Walsh has got that Tapu. This is a Tappet out of a mare that did not turf herself, and there is actually a little bit of pedigree, sibling strength, when it comes to the exchange rate filly doubled. She was okay on the grass, and then Steve Margolis has got that Beyblader on the outside. This is an Arrogate out of Serenading, who was a very nice stakes filly. Arrogate has not had much turf success, and has got just one winner so far from 19 tries on the grass. That effort, after a poor start, that debut for Beyblader was okay. And if Steve feels, you know, that he could benefit Beyblader from the grass, I'm a little intrigued. Is gonna.
I think you make good points for both of them. I mean, Beyblader, you know, Steve's usually not a first out of the box type of guy.
Right.
You can expect some improvement. And if he's running his horse second time along on the grass, it's probably where he thinks he's going to be best anyway. I mean, the first race was probably just to get him ready for this. So I can't knock anybody that includes him at all. Tapu, I haven't seen a whole bunch of, but, you know, I can't knock that there. They got turf breeding and second start. This is when they're going to make the biggest, jump in effort from first to second start. That's my opinion. So, you know, yeah, two love. Live horses in this spot, especially when you consider that the horse that's probably going to be the favorite is going to be getting his fifth chance at it. You know?
Yeah, exactly, Mizuma. And you mentioned Margot when it comes to, you know, his stats and his strengths. He's a 21% winner second out with a $3.46 ROI. He's a 20% trainer from 10 starts, 2 for 10. For $5.32, first turf, and dirt to turf 24%. There's some things to like, and Steve Margolis
is
one of the really good guys.
You can definitely get a price on the horse.
Well, then we'll turn to the Phillies go. They go a mile in the fourth, and then Marsalis, the horse that lived up to Steve Aspison's promise of running a sub-110, but it wasn't good enough. He comes back. Rosario's with him. He's got to go from the rail. Anything else in those other two maiden races?
This is another. Well, you want to talk about the seventh first, or the fourth?
Yeah, seventh.
You want to go? So this is another one where you just got a number of horses that have enough ability that are fast enough that they could win first time out. Except they're all facing each other, and then on top of all that, like you said, we got to beat a horse that ran 9-2 and got beat. Right? They got to face him. So it will not be easy. But I mean, they have some that have the talent and. You know, Malibu SS for Amos has been doing good in the mornings. This Bobby Barnett horse, Clouds Without Rain, has looked good. Strobe has looked very good for Cox. This horse has a lot of talent. You got Lagoon for a little-known trainer, Ali. This horse had a blazing gate work the other day. Really looked good. And then Can't Hush This making his second start for Amos. This is a tough race. Really is. But I will say that you know, Marsalis is clearly a horse to beat, but they have a couple in here that can definitely run. So I would definitely pay attention to the board and see who's taking money in that spot. I'm guessing Cox is second choice. He'll probably be the one that's going to have the biggest shot at him.
That seems to be Strobe, you know, out of the nice flashing. Another, it's interesting actually, just noticing, because you got flashing here in the seventh, and then Serenading. Also a top APND filly that as the mare that's Beyblader's Dam. How about the girls going along on the grass in the fourth?
In the fourth, let's go back and see what we got here. This is an interesting race too. It's another really good race. So Forgotten Realm has looked good for Cox, and Forgotten Realm has been working with the other Cox that's in this race, World Premier. I think Forgotten Realm was clearly best of those two. And Giroux's on Forgotten Realm. I think that says a lot. The two DeVoe horses, this may help. Treasure of War is getting a double equipment change. Blake is on and Declan off. So that could be a big step up for Treasure of War, who has looked good in the mornings too. And Missoni clearly, you know, ran a solid race out of the New Year's Eve. And there's that name, Trobaritz, right?
Yeah.
In his running line. So I think those are the main three that I would consider in this race. Coco Puff is one that's had a lot of chances. Gets a rod of change to Ray Lou from Loveberry. I think Loveberry gave this horse a little bit too much to do that day. But I think would have to step it up to beat the top three.
Finally, Frank, we've got three Lawbred Stakes, and the Oaks and the Derby for the girls and the boys goes as the third and the fifth, and a race that Chad Schexnader felt was one of the day's most opportune price chances, that Custer Rising as the sixth, the turf sprint.
Yeah, you know, I think the race is going to set up for a closer. And I'm leaning towards More Memories. More Memories stepped up. Well, let's go back two races. More Memories went to Delta and, in my opinion, didn't pick his feet up that day. I mean, had been doing really good down here before. And there's a lot of horses that just don't like that track. And I'm going to attest that performance to that, because More Memories came back and on the last race on Mardi Gras Day beat older horses. And as a three-year-old, I think that's significant. And the race he's coming out of is live. Had a couple of horses come back out of that race and win. He's going to get a great setup. And I think it says a lot that Amos reached out at Rosario for this horse.
That's a good point. Yep.
I expect him to turn the tables on Vika Gimlet. Unified Report is another one.
A serious horse.
Yeah, and another one that I don't think cared for Delta at all. And came back here last week, but a couple of weeks ago. This is a little quick back, and that was a big effort last time. But in my, he's one of the ones that's good enough to win. So in my mind, it's six with some Vodka Gimlet and some Unified Report. Well, More Memories on top, though.
When I drank, I had my share of Vodka Gimlets, and
That's why you don't drink anymore.
it's rocket fuel. how about the Oaks and the Sprint?
What race is that?
Third is the Oaks, and the sixth is the Costa Rising.
Okay, the third we have. Oh, this is another good race. You know, there's a lot of pace in here, but I got to think that you know, I mean, Brian rode Surrap last time, and you know, really horse really responded for him. He's gonna go again. From the fence, he's going a little bit further, went the mile, which finishes at the 16th post, so this is going to be all the way to the regular finish line, but he's going to take some pressure. Miss Jenna's a fast horse, and we'll definitely won't let him get away easily. Three horses I was looking at here: a whole lot of Mo, who is going to come running as a closer, has been doing well, and I think Calhoun's horse, Miss Paca, you know, the two-turn race he had here was kind of parked out wide, a little bit against the way the track was playing that way. And then he ran it back in a sprint, and he really had a really wide, rough trip, and it's better than it looks effort. He might get enough of a setup that moves forward that he could be a price that could get a piece of this for sure. So 1, 5, and 7 would be my numbers in there.
There we go. All right.
And then here's another one for just noticing this. Nanny's a Hoot, the turf horse for Eric Chera. James Graham's riding on another one that's going to be falling out the back and coming with a late run, trying dirt for the first time. So I hope Graham's got a bunch of goggles for Saturday. He's going to need them.
There we go. All right.
Yeah. So as we speak, Steve, I am looking at 6 horse vans in the parking lot, which means that the circus is getting ready to leave town.
Well, and of course, closing week, there, you know, used to be that Derby Day was closing day, right?
Yes, used to be that way. Yep,
for many years.
But we had one more. By the way, the card Sunday is fantastic.
That's what I heard.
Races, big full fields. Oh, it's great. A great betting card. Yep.
Outstanding.
A lot of opportunities. So you got to win Saturday so you can fire at them on Sunday.
Exactly. And it looks like Fauché is going to win another title.
Yeah, he's going to wrap it up. Yes, he is. He's been making a lot of claims and hustling and putting horses in the right spot. He's going to get it done for the home team.
Well, the Louisiana Derby and Fairgrounds Oaks and everything that comes with it on Saturday. And, of course, I should mention while we're wrapping up here, a Louisiana Derby / Kentucky Derby winner passed away. The word circulated that Grindstone, who had a very short reign as the oldest living Derby winner, you know, just a couple of weeks.
I remember that. I was here that day.
Not sure.
Dallas Stewart was Lucas's assistant.
Yeah.
At that time. Yeah. I think he's with that horse in the winner's circle picture, if I remember.
I love it. Well, Jerry Bailey, of course, and, then went to Oaklawn and was second to Zarb's Magic in the Arkansas Derby.
Another Louisiana horse, Brett Thomas.
Yeah, and then, of course, the win in the Derby that many people who bet Cavenier are still not convinced that he lost.
Right.
Right? There's people that still, it's Songbird and Beholder.
Oh, right.
The people swear that Cavenier won that photo. It's kind of funny. Grindstone, of course, never, you know, that was it after the Derby.
Wasn't he part of an entry that day?
In the Derby? Yes. Yes, absolutely.
He would have been much bigger had he run on his own that day. Remember that.
Yep. Let me think, Lucas.
He was the other part of the entry that was more favored.
I could see that. Let me, here, now you're going to make me look. Then I got to jump, but I wonder if it says so in the, I wonder if it says that.
I didn't mean to get you caught in the weeds.
No, this is us all the time. No.
Your timing's perfect, by the way. The tractors are pulling off and the horses are coming on.
Well, it's your timing that's perfect. Frank, thanks for a fabulous season. And I'll see you.
Right.
We'll see you Derby week, right?
You know what? That's in limbo. I don't know. You may.
Limbo?
You may. I'll let you know.
Limbo?
Yeah. Well, Patrick's oldest daughter is graduating college the same day as, or the day after the Derby. He's not going to be able to make it. Unless, well, you never know. We may call an audible. We'll see. Yeah, I'm hoping to be there, though.
Well,
I'm hoping to be there.
Either way, I'll touch base with you.
All right, brother. Take care.
Frank, thanks for everything. Frank McGoey, everybody, and does a great job, and now part of the they dragged him into the clocking stand. So he's been clocking, and he's out there most mornings, and you got a pretty comprehensive look between Chad Schexnader, and I know Chad put out the podcast that he was doing, the first of I think two. So that I'll send the link. For that, when I get a chance, let me reach out for Josh Pons now and get Josh going. We're a little bit late, but I absolutely wanted to get that. I wanted to get the full effect and get Frank's opinions. And it's a fun card, and I'm going to write up all 12. We've looked at it. We've looked at it so much. So. It's going to be exciting. Josh Pons is going to join us now down at Country Life Farm. And Josh, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
I'm very good. And I was reaching out to you anyway, and then the Baltimore Sun decided hours later to fet Country Life, and what a wonderfully sweet and beautiful portrait of Country Life.
Yeah, I think Dan Rodericks, who's the columnist for the Sun Papers, was just needing some, country life for a little while.
something pastoral.
Yes, precisely.
Well, you're a perfect candidate for that, undoubtedly, and it's a perfect time to check in with you because we're a little bit more than 5 weeks plus into breeding season, and there's still plenty of time for people to make arrangements, and you've had some tremendous success on the racetrack to bolster the stallion roster's appeal.
The stallions are trying hard to be to be the best in the region, and it looks like that's what they're cut out to be. Stallions kind of show it right away whether they're whether they're any good or not. If they have 110 foals or 30 foals, it's amazing that genetically some stallions have and transmit the run gene, and others don't, despite greater opportunity.
Well, and it in some cases. It's just a little bit of a, it's a little bit of a mystery. And, you've also, we had, the conversation and the visit last May when I was down for Preakness, and I'll come by again. We got to see the baby. We got the Motown baby that has resided with you, and there'll be a Mosler baby that'll be on the side of Voltarine when she comes back to get covered again by Mosler. Excited. The you bring up the regional, the regional challenge that the programs face, Josh, and trying to build a stallion and their reputation, and doing it with limited mares. I mean, talk a little bit about what you have to do to draw people to some of them.
Well, I think the biggest obstacle to growing the foal crop whether in the regions or in Kentucky, is the cost of producing that foal, the year you got to put into a brood mare, the stud fee you have to put into it, the cost of raising that baby, and to think that you're going to take it to Timonium or Keeneland or Saratoga and recoup your investment on most of them is not realistic. So the ones you lose on, the ones you sell for $9,000 at Timonium after it costs you $35,000 or $40,000 to get that horse there is very discouraging. And a lot of people just can't take it. So in this sort of scramble to find sires who are more commercial than the regional stallions, we lose the bread and butter guy from Maryland, from New York, from California, from Louisiana, from Florida. They head to Kentucky to join the 200 plus mare books down there. And it's difficult in the regions to counter that. So the regions then have to get pretty creative about the rewards for staying in the region. In Maryland, for instance, right now, we've just tweaked the breeders' awards to reward you on a scale of 40% for having bred a Maryland sired, Maryland foaled baby. And that's a pretty significant bump, especially since the purses are high. We had a really strange year last year where we lost a lot of racing time due to the problems with the track surface. They just couldn't get it right, and so we ended up having a longer meet at Pimlico and everybody stabled at Timonium, which is a track that you really don't want to breeze, you know, distance or stamina horses on. You can sprint. You can get some horses conditioned by sprinting them there, but it's too small. So we had a weird year, and that impacted our stallions' progeny earnings, which is all the sire lists are comprised of is progeny earnings. It's kind of the great dumbing down of breeding, is that you get on the list by having the most money earned. And if you're not on that list because either you don't have enough foals or you had, like we had, less opportunity than you expected, then it puts your stallion in a slow spiral. And once a stallion loses his traction in the market, they're so quickly replaced by unproven stallions that are somehow sexier than the proven horses. It's a kind of a weird, extremely market-driven environment that we're in, where 80% of the foals that are produced end up going through auctions. That's a huge number.
You, to some degree, and we touched on this when Malibu Moon passed, and you talked about the development and the way in which he was handled and the momentum that he garnered, because Country Life has had this protracted life as a stallion maker and maintainer. You've got the kind of clients that see things through. They're not it's not just fashionable and trying to go to the something, you know, the sexiest stallion. And you've had some challenges. Divining Rod, for instance, looks like he's going to be a success. And he had that hiccup getting started. So a lot of different market forces and circumstances involved, but the track record speaks for itself.
Well, yeah, it does, but you're sort of only as good as your last stallion. So those are kind of ancient history things. When Malibu Moon got started, there were 2,500 mares getting bred in Maryland. Now there's about 800. And it's a trend that's not going to stop, so you just have to adapt to it. Fortunately, we have a second farm that has a training track on it called Maryland Farm, and it's a 5/8 mile, you know, beautifully maintained, wonderful surface. It's like a clay tennis court under your feet with 3 inches of sand between it and the clay. It's very forgiving. You don't really hear the horses pounding on it. It's a great track to get young horses prepared on. So we've morphed into being an offer of racing partnerships for the Mid-Atlantic, which, you know, lets us diversify and it lets us capitalize on the money coming into the industry through the slots revenue. The purse account has, you know, is very healthy, and racing in Maryland is really just a notch below Aqueduct, or I think it's probably comparable in a lot of ways to any other circuit. You try to win a race at Laurel, you better have your running shoes on, because they're coming from Fair Hill. They're coming out of the 1500 stalls at Laurel. They got 300 horses coming from Pimlico. You know, you see every 50,000 hour allowance race has some New York trainers sending their stock down to maybe catch some low hanging fruit, but it's not hanging very low. It's it's tough to win a race.
Well, talk a second about the partnerships too, because that's been a success, and you know, you've actually put together a very nice portfolio on that front.
Yeah, I think we have too. We kind of, you know, the word pivot doesn't really work, but we kind of changed direction when we felt the erosion of the local broodmare market, so that we would be more diversified. If the whole thing's a pie chart and 30 or 40% of the pie was from stallions, I think we had to recognize that this isn't the 1980s and that we would have to be adapt. So we started putting together not just more racing partnerships, but we kind of called out the lower end mares of our own as we saw these stallions come online, and we deliberately went and sought better bred, better racing mares. We try to buy mares who could run. We have found that that though August Belmont didn't like to race his fillies very much because he thought that they left some vigor out on the track, mm-hmm. we found almost just the opposite, that unless they could run, they're not likely to have babies who could run. And taking that chance is a big chance, because if you don't have babies that can run, Steve, then you don't earn the residual breeders' awards. You may sell at a Timonium and recoup some of your production costs, but if the babies can't run, you don't earn breeders' awards. And the breeders' awards at 35 and 40% are so significant that you have to play the percentages. And so we kind of looked at all our brood mares and we, you know, dispersed the lower end and we retooled at the upper end. We love mares by Malibu Moon, of course, because he started here and he's also an excellent broodmare sire, and it's kind of right in our wheelhouse. So we bought a couple of expensive mares by Malibu Moon. By expensive, I mean six-figure, high five figures. You know, certainly not shopping on Night of the Stars for stuff, but really strong mares for the regions. Infold, Good Stallions in Kentucky, Liam's Map and Omaha Beach, and you know, just Gun Runner. We have a mare Infold, a Gun Runner.
Wow.
Two Infold, a Bolt Duro. So we're bringing them back here to make Maryland breads, because we're going to have the best quality stock to compete and be successful. It's always in some form of transformation from one thing to another. I mean, the year Man of War was a two-year-old, they had, 1,500 foals. In 2020, there was 45,000 foals. In 2000. In 2020, it's dropped by half. That's the biggest thing, is the national foal crop decline is being felt stronger in the regions than it is in Kentucky. If Maryland has dropped 50 or 60%, Kentucky's only dropped 15 to 20%. So it tells you that, we're swimming against a pretty strong current. We talk all the time in the office. We have frank discussions, and a lot of it's not fun. I mean, we sold Super 99 to Pennsylvania. He and saying goodbye to a stallion is part of the game, but boy, it's a tough one to tell your crew that who've taken care of these horses so beautifully day after day after day, and the relationships you form with them. I don't know how they do it in Kentucky. I mean, they're not even in their third or fourth years at stud, and they're already putting them on boats to Turkey. Mm. As soon as they lose that mojo, the big corporate wheel starts spinning them out. And we have to do that too. We have to be as hard-hearted as anybody else, or we won't survive. And we'd rather, take a bitter pill and keep moving than stock yourself with horses that aren't received in the market. It's a business,
No doubt. A couple of things. When you talk about choosing for the Country Life Farm breeding partnerships and picking mares that have records, didn't Kenny, Ken Ramsey, essentially, he made Kitten's Joy by doing that, by going out and he was claiming, even mares that, for 10 and a nickel, if they were winners, how many 200 mares a year to get him going. So there's some rubber meeting road as an example for that approach. Do the people that come in as partners on the mares, are they also in racing, or is it a separate, do you find it's a kind of a separate mentality when people inquire and come in on these partnerships?
Well, that's a very good question. There are some people who only want to be in racing. If you have a horse in training and it's sound, about once a month, you're sending an email out, meet you at the track, meet you at the restaurant, meet you in the paddock. There's this adrenaline pump to it that kind of offsets the odds of making money when you finish fourth or fifth or sixth and you just picked up $1,500 or $2,000. And, it's a reckoning in the breeding game. You don't have as many adrenaline pumps. You have a decision to make every year who you're going to breed or to, and that is an area that often feels like you can be challenged on your decision by your partners, because you're studying it and you're trying to crystal ball who's going to come out with runners or who's going to be really commercial at the time you sell the baby out of this mare, whether it's a weanling or a yearling. And there's no magic to it. You just have to take your best shot, take the data that you have and the dollars that you think you can put to it, and make your best decision. And most of the time you're going to be wrong. For every gun runner, there's 20 failures. The most educational tool there is the third crop sire list. If you go to the third crop sire list, there's just two or three horses that have made it that can be bred to reliably and sell their babies, and the rest of them are struggling because they didn't get the break, or they didn't have the run gene, or they just weren't going to be good stallions. It's a really it's a really cream rises kind of a thing. And so, you know, you have to go through that process with your partners in the breeding game and try to keep them informed and hope they have the confidence in you that you've made the right call. We're breeding mares this year, back to Bolt Duro, back to Global Campaign. We've got mares, you know, 13 of our 18 or 20 mares are in Kentucky, because we have to play the big cat game. And, you know, Improbables on our list, a bunch of really nice Kentucky stallions in that kind of middle range. Last year, Gunrunner was in the upper middle range at 50,000. And our advisor, John Stewart in Kentucky, said, "Hey, take a shot, you know, let's go." And so we watched with glee as Gunrunner just took off, and our partners, you know, knowing that they've got a mare in foal to him, kind of feel like, you know, like we knew what we're doing.
Well, just, no doubt. Well, and the one then, I was down at Ocala Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and what appears to be, you know, literally lightning striking with Bolt Duro. It was a, even before Tuesday, even before they started to go under gavel, when I asked any number of people that were there, you know, who are you impressed with, Bolt Duro, Bolt Duro, Bolt Duro, it was crazy.
Yeah, you know, and there's plenty of sons of Medal D'Oro who have failed, and few that have made it. So you're bucking you're bucking some trends, but still, you know, those guys that look at foals and look at them as they grow, and
right,
the opportunity he gets at Spendthrift, you know, he could be this summer's Gunrunner. You know, we also have some better bred babies in training. We have a Gunrunner 2-year-old with Randy Bradshaw in Florida right now, and he's doing a beautiful job with they can be kind of temperamental, the Gunrunners, and you sort of look at them and go, no wonder when somebody comes to your throat latch at the 16th pole, you dig in. Our experience with them is that they got attitude, and attitude, you know, lots of great stallions had attitude, you know, they had a 12-foot high fence around Rebo.
Exact Dinoformer.
So,
you know, I'm just looking at this list. Race some of the racehorse that you're sending out, the 2-year-olds that are getting ready. You've got a Malibu Moon. That's the half to
three Malibu Moons. There's a pair of them with Chris Cole at the Middleburg Training Center getting Virginia certified, which is another really wonderful program for the Mid-Atlantic. It's you know, the Colonial Downs has been a bright spot in the Mid-Atlantic. How often does a racetrack come back from the dead? Not very often. And it was dead for 6 years and then was resurrected by, you know, a savvy gaming company, and then, you know, recently purchased by Churchill Downs, which sort of sends shivers up you given their track record. But you know, we can't control who buys and sells the racetracks, but still, it they're still going to have huge purses. And so we have horses being Virginia certified to go with their Maryland bred, to go with their Maryland sired status. And you know, so you kind of punch the ticket with the hole punched in several different states. And by doing that, we have several Delaware certified babies. It just throws a little icing on the cake when you have a good one and suddenly you're getting money from other programs.
Right.
It's painful to have your own horse hotel and have to stay in other people's hotels, but you know, that's just part of adapting. You got to play the game.
Yeah, noting actually, you bring up the certification, the Delaware certify, the Virginia certify, and we've talked about this that, you know, you play this right, and you can you know, take advantage of so many and the regional, you know, there's so much within an easy distance, driving distance. Then you fold in a program just on Tuesday afternoon, Alan Foreman and the team getting ready for another year of the match series throughout the Mid-Atlantic. More money and a chance to go through, move around the region. So there's if you go about this thoughtfully and are patient and work with somebody like the Ponce family and Country Life. I mean, that it goes a long way. And in fact, you've got a couple of people I should mention. Talk about Mosler, who were delighted to have this baby coming in the next couple of weeks and then breeding back to him. But Adele Dilschneider has a piece, right? Yeah. And supports him with mares.
Yes. She loves the horse. He's a war front out of a really good family that Seth Hancock at Cherry Valley Farm developed. It's a great pedigree, and he was very fast. And they're, the best stallions are the fastest horses. So this guy got better as he got older. Mosler did. We bought three quarters of him while he was still in training. We bought his breeding rights, and usually that means that the horse is going to, finish last in his next start and his career peter out as soon as you make an investment in him. But he came down, and Edgar Prado kept him covered up in the Laurel Sprint, Laurel Dash, 100,000-mile race. His first start after we became partners with Seth Hancock and Mrs. Dilschneider. And he wins, and he beats Ben's Cat. We're jumping up and down like, how does this happen? Yeah. And then he paved the way for Divining Rod, who was a head bob. He's the son of Tappet out of Precious Kitten, who's a three-quarter sister to Kitten's Joy. And he's just a head bob away from being a millionaire grade one winner by Tappet and being, fawned over in Kentucky. But that, how long is a head? Is it 18 inches? Is it 24 inches? It's kind of an illusion, but he picked his head up in the Cigar Mile when Connect put his head down. And that kind of illusion made him accessible to the Mid-Atlantic. And so we bred 101 mares to him, and he had 70-some foals, 60-some. And he's had 45 starters and 25 winners, and some of them are evidencing, real talent. The filly Divine Huntress was purchased by Eclipse Thoroughbreds after a maiden win at Parks, and she ran in the Rachel Alexandra grade two about 3 weeks ago and just had a funny trip. And the word is that she's just fine and she's still on the Kentucky Oaks trail, which would be super fabulous for a regional stallion to have, even to have a horse in it. So those two guys look to be our young guns for the future, Mosler and Divining Rod, and we're really pleased with them. We just need more people to own broodmares in the regions. So, but we're also, not trying to tell the market what to do. If you think this is a really good horse, then come breed to him. Why not? $5,000.
Well, and in fact, our friend Will Schwartz, Mainline Racing, Will and his son are upgrading their program, and they bought some mares in November, and bringing two of them to Divining Rod.
Yeah, Divining Rod has sort of a best of the Mid-Atlantic, breeders lined up to him. A lot of Pennsylvania breeders that are looking for, a good horse, or they're training against the Divining Rods at Parks, and they're saying, wow, who is that guy? You know, and so with limited opportunity and kind of, honestly, kind of marginal mares, with the exception of initial support, Gainsway bred 10 mares his first year and 10 mares his second. Country Life has bred, God, 15 or 20 to get him started the first couple of years. Gretchen and Roy Jackson have supported him with really good mares and then have followed that up with their attention at the sales, and then bought a $140,000 yearling last year. And, you know, just the best divining rods go to the sale and the best people are looking at them, which is really encouraging. All he needs is what every horse needs, and that's a marquee horse. You know, the table's set and you've done what you can do, and you just keep your fingers crossed that the racing gods look down on you, because you still need a lot of luck in this game.
That part of it, you know, never changes. You know, you can do all you can, and you still need a couple of drops of magic.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm standing in the attic where I brought you last year, and I discovered all these files in the basement of my grandfather, who worked for August Belmont, and he was in charge of the sale of Man of War at Saratoga. And, you know, Man of War was this big, gangly, good-boned, high-headed colt that Sam Riddle thought would be a good hunter. So he buys him, you know, with the idea that if he can't run, we'll hunt him. And and he turns out to be the, you know, maybe the greatest horse of all time, particularly given his limited opportunity at stud. He could have been the greatest stallion of all time, but Sam Riddle was sort of a, you know, kind of a snob about who got to breed to him, and he bred a bunch of his own, you know, poor mares. But that kind of luck it defines, you know. I mean, look how lucky we were with Malibu Moon. He won one race. He ran twice and won one race. And Mr. Hughes, B. Wayne Hughes, who bred and raced him, you know, would have loved to have stood him in Kentucky right away, but nobody would have bred to him. So we hustled and beat the street and laid down in front of horse vans and got him to turn into the stallion barn and got 100 mares to him. And, you know, his first crop, he has a $4,700 Timonium yearling named Perfect Moon that Mel Studi, who trained Malibu Moon, you know, wins the Hollywood Juvenile Championship and the Best Pal Stakes, and it just sets Malibu Moon up. And the second crop, he had Declan's Moon. And those two geldings are part of our horse inventory here at the farm. And every time I look at them, I just go, how did you do that? You know, $4,700 Timonium yearling, and he made Malibu Moon, Perfect Moon did. And then the second crop, I mean, Bryce Risley buys a mare out of the Baltimore Sun Classifieds for $3,500, and her foal is the mother of Declan's Moon. It's just crazy how this stuff goes, but, you know, you gotta stay in the game in order to have that kind of good fortune happen to you, and that's why we've tried to adapt to this changing climate in the horse business, because we think that there's another good horse out there in the future, and we want to be prepared.
Well, too much success for too long, and that's, you know, that's the why, you know, why the people are confident in doing, you know, in working with you and coming to Country Life, and it's a special atmosphere. It's historic, and you know, there's just so much about it that it really evokes all the best of the game. And Maryland, and I, we've made this point many times over the years, when there was the gambling blackout, 1908 to 1910, only Maryland and Kentucky continued with racing. If it wasn't for, you know, Maryland was the only place in the East that maintained, you know, seasons of racing through the blackout, and it basically sustained racing for the region.
Yeah, they built Laurel in 1911, and they built Haverty Grace in 1912, and they both had rail service, so the rich New Yorkers that didn't send their horses abroad to be trained in England.
The history is great, and you know, we had, Alan was on the other day too. To in addition, we mentioned the match series, but we also talked about the redevelopment plan, which is going forward. It's been delayed a little bit because of ambient circumstances, but it is gonna come. And when it comes to the future too, I got to mention one thing, Josh. Josh Pond's with us, Country Life Farm, of course. And tell me about the pony race clinic at Maryland with all the kids that came out for that.
Oh God, yeah. My heart was in my throat because, 15 or 20 kids riding as fast as a pony can run. I went to the University of Kentucky Law School. Assumption of risk was high on my mind. But Christy got a nice insurance binder waiver, and all the due diligence was done properly, and there were no misfortunes, but these kids got to ride on a racetrack, and race on it. I mean, the opportunity to do that. One of the big criticisms of the horse business is that it's hard to get the next generation involved. They, not these little kids. They're just pony clubbers at the moment, but they're going to grow up to run the Maryland horse breeders and the Virginia horse breeders, and they're going to own horses. And their passion, almost all of us were passionate about it as kids. It's just this lifelong thing. So many of our partners were introduced to the game by, their kind of colorful uncle who took them to the track. Well, these kids were actually on the track, and wonderful, exciting pictures of ponytails flying behind everybody in their riding helmets. And, it was good on Christy Holden. She's our general manager here at the farm. And, she kind of assesses the risks of things, and she's brave. And, she loves horses, started out riding as a kid herself. And, made a believer of me, and so I'm looking forward to maybe growing that a little bit and doing our part to keep the kids involved so that we're seeding for the future. We live in Maryland where lacrosse is big, and kids start playing lacrosse at 3 years old. And the horse business doesn't do a very good job of growing the next generation. It's one of the areas that perhaps should be explored a little bit.
We talk about this topic in different guises, and there's a lot of there's a lot of people that have been motivated on that front. The young people that created Amplify Horse Racing, they've been innovative and doing some fabulous things. But bringing young kids. I was at Oaklawn. We were at the HBPA convention, and people may have heard us talking about this group that kept coming through the hotel. And there's a market, of course, in Arkansas in Hot Springs that is completely devoted to racing, and they look forward to it, and they throng the racetrack all winter and into the spring. But they, here was this group of kids being introduced, these high school kids.
Yeah, great.
Yeah. There's places where, much like Maryland, actually, and you mentioned Virginia, there are pockets up here, up by Saratoga, of course, and in Kentucky, where it is still a way of life. It's still a lifestyle. The public is less far removed from agrarian life. I mean, we talk about this being one of the challenges for the industry, is that, there's fewer and fewer people growing up having any proximity to farm life and to the equine. I mean, even I, growing up in Connecticut, I had friends that kept that kept hunters and show ring horses, and I rode horses at summer camp, at a swim camp, Brentwood. My introduction to and I'm 62, but it's one of the challenges the game has, and it's one of the reasons that there seems to be people that are that are just not understanding this enterprise as a sport and an industry, because it's just foreign to them. But that isn't the case where you are, certainly, and we do have pockets where that isn't an issue.
Yeah. Well, fortunately, we do. And the Maryland Horse Breeders Association is very sensitive to the mission that they started in 1929 when they formed the Maryland Horse Breeders, of being inclusive. We have a huge steeplechase community in Maryland.
Sure.
There's a passion there that is missing from the thoroughbred sport, where we sometimes just... horses are just commodities, and the $5,000 claimer that should be running for $20,000 instead of the $5,000 claim. There's a hardness to the thoroughbred game that when I dip my toes into the steeplechase world, it's just a little more old school, old values, and a little more generous to the horse, and we could use more of that in the thoroughbred game.
Yeah, well put, and certainly a Country Life Farm, and with Josh and Michael Pons, and you mentioned Christy Holden. I'll mention also Sally Ellen Hurst, who does a wonderful job communicating everything that's going on. People listening and curious about getting involved, you couldn't be involved with better people that are more experienced, more committed, and they will provide you with everything you need to know, whether it's going to Frisian Fire and Mosler and Divining Rod, if from a breeding standpoint, or getting involved in the racing or the broodmare partnerships. Reach out to Country Life, countrylifefarm.com for more. And Josh, I we're on the doorstep of the classic season, and I love the week in Baltimore, and we'll see you soon.
Yeah, we'll see you soon. We want a basketball court rematch.
Not for me. That's Trombetta. Trombetta. And in fact, that's
farm rules. Yeah.
How many Trombetta babies are there that have hit the ground so far?
Oh, a couple. And Mike and his wife just love the babies. I mean, it's incredible their enthusiasm for coming and visiting their foals. It's a new part of the game, and I think more trainers should own, broodmares, and they could collect their own breeders' awards. In the old days, lots of trainers had half a mare or bred a mare. There's a few left that do it. Hammy Smith and some others still breed,
yeah.
But there's not much breeding done by trainers, simply because the expense of raising that foal, and they don't understand. When you take it to a sale and don't get what it costs to put in it. If they do that with a horse, they put it in a claiming race and they lose it and they get something back. But anyway, the Trombetta's love, and he lives just over the hill from Maryland at Country Life, so he can go to either farm fairly quickly, and he's enjoying being a breeder.
I see where a horse that a mare, Bells of War, that he and Todd Mostoller are partnered on, had a 145-pound baby.
Yeah, great big baby. Yeah, yes, and Mike has a baby by Win Win Win, who he trained in
sure.
Grade one at Saratoga. He's sort of setting the table to clip the coupons and train, train his own babies here in a couple years.
Well, we will look forward to another visit. And I haven't been to Maryland, so this trip in May,
yeah,
we'll get over there. And I cannot wait to see what I understand has been a handful. The Motown cult is apparently insane, and is a little tough.
Don't worry, he'll come around.
Well, good luck to the partnership too, and yeah. you got some runners coming up tomorrow. In fact, I see London Lady in at Gulfstream.
Yeah, she's a Florida bred. We sort of branched out and bought a 2-year-old Florida bred from Kip Elser, and she's knocking at the door. She's actually had a few sort of, you know, we all make excuses, but she's had a few troubled trips. But she's got talent. She's by Hardspun, and you know, they get better with age as well. And, you know, the turf season opens up here, hopefully early April. So we'll bring the Florida bred to Maryland. But she runs tomorrow at Gulfstream.
In fact, I just happened to pull up, you know, by the Stallions. You've got a bunch of starters tomorrow.
Dazzy's a Divining Rod. She's in the $75,000 stakes on Saturday. You get enough bread on the water. It's exciting. The part of Standing Stallions that's kind of quietly thrilling is when, you know, enough of them get to the track that you can track them, you know, through your express bet accounts and through all the data that you receive. And, you know, 9 o'clock at night, you'll get an alert that somebody just won at Charlestown or somebody won at Penn. And then on Saturdays, you're hopefully in some stakes. I mean, Locomotive was just in the third. He's a Divining Rod, who's one of the better 3-year-olds in Maryland. And, you know, he's on the Tessio path. If he were to win the Tessio, it's a win and you're in for
right.
the Preakness. You know, so it's kind of like, you know, those things don't happen often, so you got to be realistic, but they're out there to happen, and they make you get up in the morning and
yeah,
you know, anybody that's got a horse in a race, that's all they think about the whole day.
You know,
they'll leave their shoes on top of the car, they'll misplace something, but they're thinking about you know, how we're going to do at Laurel this afternoon. It's an incredibly absorbing sport.
It is. There's nothing like it. The highs are unparalleled, and you can enjoy them, and the Pons family will help you. Josh, this was wonderful. Thank you so much.
Great, Steve. Look forward to seeing you at Preakness Time.
You got it. Josh Pons, everybody. Country Life Farm. And you can follow him on Twitter. And you got countrylifefarm.com. And you couldn't be in better hands. It's been a wonderful decision that we made to get involved with Mosler. And we're going to breed back. We're going to have two of them. I don't even know. I haven't even asked, actually, about whether we've got a boy or a girl. And I didn't know what to expect yesterday when the word came from Rock Ridge with Carlisle Bell's baby, the Leofric. So second generation. This is son of the daughter that we bred from our first major, you know, not our first horse. First horse was Someone Loves You, but our first Lost Sable Chasm. And, you know, there's such pleasure, in this. I mean, and you've heard from me that we've had some bad luck, frankly, when it comes to the breeding, and you have to put on the long pants. It's not for the faint of heart. There's travail. I mean, we've lost the babies that, I mean, that was his, the baby, the Disco Rico cult, I think about all the time, really. And that, you know, that was as tough a, you know, thing as anything that's happened, really, around, our, you know, the game. So I've said this before, you have to be prepared for thrills like you just have never known, and you better be prepared for, you know, moments of real anguish. I mean, it's a commitment that, you know, that really you'll feel alive one way or the other, and you know, it can't all be successes and pleasures, but when they come, they're worth the wait, and certainly Josh and his brother and everybody at the Country Life, they've got really, I mean, like a century, the family of history and experience. Let's take a break. Bottom of the hour, we've got Tony Black rolling in. We've got Joe Clancy and Rich Eng over these next 90 minutes. Plenty to do. Second half, Thursday at the races, Sirius XM. Back after this.
Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Nationally recognized for making stallions since 1933 and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading freshman sire, Mosler by Warfront, as well as Divining Rod, Frisian Fire, and Super 99. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the foaling barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to...
The PA Horse Breeders Association introduces the Pennsylvania Stallion Series. Four brand new races to be run at parks for PA-sired, PA-bred two-year-olds. There are two $100,000 contests on August 22nd, PA Day at the races.